This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This summer, writer Jeanette Winterson was at the centre of a Twitter storm, all because she killed and ate an animal to which many of us are sentimentally attached.
So, Jeanette Winterson has become the Mr. McGregor of Twitter. That was one of the gentler tweets aimed at the award-winning writer after she sent out pictures of a rabbit she had killed bubbling away on the stove. Her explanation was Twitterishly succinct, almost a haiku. Rabbit ate my parsley. I am eating rabbit.
This is worse than Freddie Starr ate my hamster. And I've had at least 100 tweets a minute since Sunday. I'm deluged with it.
I mean, won't mind me quoting a couple of the more robust ones, shall we say. You make me sick. I will never again read a word you write.
She'll have to stick to reading vegetarians, which I think is probably going to restrict her reading list quite a lot. And God forbid she should ever read Ted Hughes, who snared and ate more rabbit than I ever shall.
Yes, Mr. Rabbit, he's learned his lesson at last. Yes, Mr. Rabbit, you've learned your lesson at last.
Eating rabbit now divides the nation. For some, it's delicious, inexpensive, and if you're a townie, a bit exotic.
Okay, lovely people, spaghetti bolognese, but I want to give you a new perspective. From this one little rabbit, I'm going to do rabbit bolognese, right? 2 minutes to put together, and then slow cook.
But a lot of the rabbits we're now eating don't come from Mr. McGregorland.
Celebrity chefs are often pushing this. We often see it in the media as being pushed as an exotic, a low-fat, perhaps a quirky sort of a meal to eat. Something interesting, something a bit different. But the level of suffering behind it makes it totally unjustifiable.
We'll hear more about that argument later. Last year, we imported almost three times as much farmed rabbit meat as the year before. We're still not big consumers, but we're learning. Sales of rabbits are increasing in supermarkets. M&S have been selling wild rabbit since 2012, and sales are up 20%. We'll be hearing in the programme from two chefs who think we should be eating much more of that good stuff.
I've then minced down the loin and other sections of the rabbit meat, mixed that in with leeks, mushrooms.
We started farming rabbits here a long time ago. The Normans conquered us and brought their rabbits with them. Farmed rabbits are common in many parts of Europe. And now we import more than £3 million worth each year, mostly from France, Italy, Belgium and Spain. So if you buy it from a butcher, unless it's labelled as wild, or eat it in a restaurant, you'll undoubtedly be eating meat reared in a cage. And a new report from the charity Compassion in World Farming shows how dire the conditions are in most of those cage systems. They're now campaigning to get the cages banned. I asked Dil Peeling, their director of campaigns, what regulations there are in the moment in the EU for rabbit farming.
There's nothing specific. There's
nothing.
There's nothing which supports rabbits directly at the EU level.
So when you talk about rabbits being farmed in cages, what are we talking about? What kind of cages?
You go into one of these rabbit farms and you're stepping back into the dark ages. They're completely barren. They are bare wire floors with no bedding on them whatsoever. Bear in mind how soft that the feet of a rabbit is, that they cause injury to the animals. They are often dirty. Our investigators found it difficult to breathe with the levels of ammonia in some of these places. Not uncommon to find dead and decomposing rabbits lying on or even in the cages alongside other animals.
So how big are the cages and how many rabbits are there in?
What most animals are getting in these barren cages are something about the size of an A4 sheet or even less. So it's comparable with the sort of space that we used to give to our laying hens in the very barren cages beforehand. But because there's no law in place, there is no legal minimum, and you can cram them in as much as you like. And as they get bigger, obviously, the space available to each rabbit gets less.
And how big a business is rabbit farming in the EU?
It is the second most commonly farmed animal in Europe. It is the most caged animal in Europe. It's an enormous industry. So why is keeping animals in cages, particularly rabbits, so bad? It is because, one, they get sick. The mortality in these systems is usually about 10%, but it can be as high as 30%. We need to keep them propped up on antibiotics. A recent survey in France, looking at the farms that it surveyed, showed that they were using 7 times as much antibiotics as you would expect to use in a meat chicken farm. And remember, the meat chicken industry is one that does use a disproportionate amount of antibiotics. They get sick with fungi. We saw many of them with infected eyes. We saw many of them with very distressing head tilts, which is usually caused by a parasite in the ear that tilts their head.
There are some countries, aren't there, within Europe that are trying to change this system?
Yes, indeed there are. Austria, which is another country a little like the UK that has an enviable reputation for being sensitive to animal welfare, has banned the barren cages. They're not permitted in Austria, and they're going to be banned in the Netherlands from 2016. And following a successful campaign by an animal welfare organisation called Gaia in Belgium, we're expecting all cages to be banned for fattening rabbits in Belgium.
So if in Britain you want to buy a rabbit, how would you track down a rabbit from a good welfare system?
I would simply ask the butcher how it was reared, and unless they can assure you that it was not reared in a factory-farmed, caged system, I simply wouldn't buy it from them.
Dil Peeling from Compassion in World Farming. You can see the films they made in a number of European rabbit farms on the charity's website. We contacted the National Federation of Meat and Food Traders for a response. They told us,
"It is our view that the sale of wild as well as farmed rabbit meat is a legitimate trade which is regulated throughout the European Union. It is also our view that any detected poor treatment and abuse of standards of welfare during rearing is not to be tolerated, and those responsible must be severely dealt with by the appropriate authorities."
Farmed rabbit is, for the moment, the grim side of the story. But wild rabbit is increasingly available because their numbers are going up. Dan Saladino has been exploring the possibilities of cooking the wild with chefs Oliver Pratt and Barney Horton.
So wafting across the table, Barney, I can smell some white wine and some thyme. Explain which rabbit dish you've brought in.
Well, this is a dish from northern Italy, from the Piemont. And it's really just a casserole of rabbit with carrots and onions and celery and parsley and thyme.
But we're here with these wonderful smells, these odours coming across the table, and with Oliver as well. So Barney,
Hello.
can we try some of this?
You bet. Quick. As we all know, it's not something that we eat very much in this country, but it's very common. It's one of the most, you'll see in every single little trattoria in
It does smell absolutely delicious.
But people often say, use chicken as a reference point for trying to get across the texture and colour of rabbit. Is that, would you say that's a good indication for the listeners?
No, not really. I think people often say, oh, it tastes like chicken, but to me it doesn't. It's got a very distinctive, quite delicate flavour.
And this is lovely and tender as well. So as you were saying, it's a lean meat, but the way it's been cooked, slow cooked in the casserole.
Yep. Mm. And the thing I noticed was the minute I put that meat in my mouth, that gamey flavour really came through.
Mm. And it's incredibly simple. It probably took me, including the jointing from scratch of the rabbit, the whole business into the oven took maybe 25 minutes.
Yeah. We'll put the recipe on the website, Barney, but eating this and enjoying it as we are does beg the question, why is it that we don't eat more rabbit?
I think one of the principal reasons is that we don't mass-produce rabbit in this country, so therefore it is a bit more of a luxury item in terms of coming off managed estates and game, and it's also a pet.
It's one of the few. It is the only pet really that we also eat.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
What's interesting is that before the 1950s and the introduction of myxomatosis, it's thought the rabbit population in Britain fluctuated between 60 and 100 million. It's now around 37 million. Despite that decline, the tradition of catching wild rabbits has remained firmly in place in communities throughout the country. Now, you might think that it's an exclusively rural pursuit, but we've come across an example on a housing estate built on the edge of Bristol in the 1930s called Knowle West. Now, at this point, I need to explain that the Hunting Act of 2004 banned the use of trained dogs to hunt rabbits. However, there are exemptions, and it's still possible to cull rabbits in this way on private land and with strict conditions in place. Obviously, it continues to be a strongly debated and controversial issue. Penny Evans from the Knowle West Media Centre has been gathering accounts of local rabbiting, and she spoke to a couple of born and bred Knowle Westerners about it, Sandra and Steve.
So, Steve, tell us a little bit about the culture in Knowle West around rabbiting.
I think originally it was for food, basically. People went out, they were poor. Knowle's always been one of these areas who's been not poor, but on the borderline. And a lot of people went rabbiting to feed themselves. I'm from a family of eight, so imagine my dad going and buy a joint of meat, it's going to cost him 50 quid. But if he went rabbiting a couple of times a week, it's a lot cheaper. It's like my dad taught me to rabbit, his dad taught him to rabbit. I taught my three kids to rabbit, and I'll teach my grandkids as well.
And I remember somebody telling me that people used to go around to the pubs and, you know, they'd go in and they'd have a lot of rabbits they'd put on the table and people would buy them. And does that sort of thing still go on in different ways?
Yeah, it do, but not as much. People eat their rabbits, they cook pies or they eat them as they cook them, and they use these joints and that. So it's still quite a big culture. There's still a lot of people eating rabbit.
San,
tell
us a bit about some of these lads that go out.
Oh, I personally. So the young people that I know that go out are very dedicated to what they do. They keep their dogs. So they've got lurchers, greyhounds, and Jack Russells. Are all kept very, very well, you know, there, and they go out with the dogs and, you know, come back with rabbits for people to cook, and they sometimes get shared, you know, just within the households, or they'll give them to neighbours as well, especially some of the elderly neighbours who do like a nice rabbit to stew up or make a pie with.
So who cooks the rabbits up?
Lots of people. I cook rabbit. I'm lucky enough to get given rabbits by some people that go out rabbiting. I love cooking rabbit. I love the taste of rabbit. It's really nice. I put in the slow cooker with lots of veg and a bit of gravy and let it cook overnight, and I get a couple of days' worth of meal out of it. It's really good. Rabbit stew's amazing. Yeah, it's not an unusual meal.
Sandra, Steve and Penny Evans from the Knowle West Media Centre talking rabbit there. Now, you're more likely to find rabbit that's been shot by a gamekeeper or professional stalker, which is what Simon Parks found when we last reported on rabbit on the food programme. And he went to Chilham near Canterbury in Kent with Mark Gilchrist, who's owner and head chef of the catering company Game for Everything.
So just sort of talk me through this. We're actually sitting on top of this 4x4 vehicle, and we've got a big lamp attached to the side.
It's plugged into the cigarette lighter, and Guy's got it in his hand, and he's going to pan through the field, and when he sees a rabbit, hopefully it'll squat down and then try and hide itself, and then I'm going to shoot it.
And there's one over in the distance. We're at an odd angle there because the rabbit is in the hedgerow.
Yeah, you've also got to be quite careful. You can't shoot unless you can see some ground behind the rabbit, because a bullet will go through the rabbit. It could injure someone or another animal far away, and these bullets are lethal for up to a mile.
Oh, there's one tearing across the field.
Go left, go left.
Did you get him?
Yeah, it's one. Guys, what he's done there is he's just made sure it's dead. by stretching it and breaking its neck.
Right.
The guy's just going to squeeze the bladder to make sure that there's no urine left in the bladder. Because if you leave that in, that's going to taint the meat and make it taste bitter.
Some people often talk about an ammonia taste. Is that what that's down to?
Yes,
that it hasn't been drained.
It's part of the process of preparing the rabbit. So it's one of the first things you do as soon as you shoot it. What you've got to do is make sure that every animal is killed as quickly and humanely as possible. And if you do wound one, you have a responsibility to catch it and kill it humanely.
As cleanly as possible.
As quickly and cleanly as possible. Mm. And you've got to do it, you know, within seconds of doing it. You can't leave it and come back for it later. You've got to do it straight away. It's so important.
That was Mark Gilchrist of Game for Everything. Well, with me are chefs Barney Horton and Oliver Pratt. Oliver.
Hello.
Cooking is now well underway.
So what I've made is a ballantine of rabbit. I've used the saddle of the rabbit. I've then minced down the loin and other sections of the rabbit meat. Mixed that in with leeks, mushrooms, thyme, and some sage. I've then laid that all out nice and flat, wrapped it in pancetta. So what I'm doing now is I'm frying those sort of ballantine parcels, those sausages off.
Barney, has the smell of this arrived at your end of the table?
Smelling lovely, absolutely great. I've got that pancetta whip there, really good.
Is this something for the beginner?
One of the things I was going to say about rabbit is that it's incredibly cheap. So if you don't get it right first time, it's not a great waste. And the worst thing that's going to happen is that it'll be a bit dried out.
Where should we look to buy rabbit?
You go to your local butcher, and if he doesn't stock rabbit, then you say, can you get me some? That's pretty well as simple as that. I mean, a game butcher's going to be, we'll know about that anyway. And the more we ask for it, the more it's going to be there.
You ready to try some, Barney?
I certainly am.
Yeah, do you fancy a bit of that, Barney? I'll come on over.
Thank you so much.
I'll serve you a bit up. Thank you, Oliver. You can have a try.
It's really delicious.
Do you know what the beautiful thing about this is, and I think this is what says to me about rabbit is wild and fresh and un-mass produced, you know, and the blackberries have just literally come off the bush and the hawthorns have come off the bush. Mm. There's an additional flavour going on there that comes from something being beautifully fresh. Mm.
And you can say the same of the rabbit itself, is that it isn't. Exactly. It's because it's wild.
Yeah.
Well, the taste is incomparable, really. If we had a farmed rabbit done in this way, you'd never get this.
Whereas the farmed, you would say,
is more like chicken. But what there is, the reason why chefs use it is because it's much more tender.
Well, part of the same family, but even less well known, is the hare. And I went to go and visit Mark Hicks, the chef, to hear why he still cooks with hare and what his fascination with it is.
Everyone thinks I'm mad when I tell this story.
By the way, Mark Hicks's hare story starts in Dorset in 1969.
When I was at school, we did this subject called rural science. A part of the class was you had to skin hares, and it was a genuine school subject. Someone would just hang a brace of hair on our back door handle. The legs would have been tied together and they'd have just been hanging there, you know. You had to get them in before the foxes got them. But traditionally, like rabbit, hair did a lot of harm to farmland, and so they had to be culled. Things that were culled had to be eaten.
So this is Jane Grigson.
Yeah. A little look.
Mark Hicks has a vast collection of old cookery books, taking up a large wall. They span centuries of writing on British food. Yeah, jugged, page 222.
Let's see what she has to write about it.
And pick one that's over 100 years old, and inside you're almost guaranteed to see a recipe for jugged hare. From Hannah Glass to Isabella Beaton.
Jugged hare, a l'anglaise, skin. So this is one of those recipes that isn't a recipe, it's just almost like a diary entry. Skin cleanse and cut the hare into nice neat pieces, not larger than an egg. Season with pepper and a little cayenne and salt, and fry over the fire with 2 ounces of butter and about 2 ounces of small square pieces of bacon until a good brown colour. Put it into a wide mouthed jar with 4 good wine glasses of port wine. Well, today, I think we should use port wine.
What's striking about hare is that although it's from the same family as rabbit, the meat is darker and far more gamey. Hare is also found in much smaller quantities, so needs to be carefully sourced.
You know, hare is not as cheap as rabbit. You know, you can buy a rabbit, a wild rabbit, for a couple of quid. This would probably cost you 6-7 quid. I'm just going to cut it in half, like that. And I'm not going to bone it, I'm going to keep all the bones in. Because by the time these are braised and they shrink, that'll be nice sort of sized portion pieces. So,
done properly, jugged hare can be a 5-day affair. Once jointed, it's left in a marinade. In this case, port wine, thyme, bay leaves and juniper berries. Mark then left it for 4 days and cooked on the 5th. It's lightly browned and then stock is added, ready for the jugging. The art of slow cooking in a closed container. Traditionally, towards the end of the 2 hours of cooking, blood would have been added.
When the hare is killed, it contains a lot of blood after they've baked. It's important to keep the blood, so that's a form of sort of thickening agent as well. But if you buy a hare from a butcher shop these days, it doesn't always come with the blood.
And the blood is added towards the end of
the end, and as the blood congeals with the heat, it just gives it that thickness. But cooking like that these days, you don't really see it an awful lot. It's not everyone's cup of tea really doing that. Have a sniff of that. A
lovely thick sauce.
Mm. Mm-hmm. The port and the gamey flavours of the hare, they've all kind of just got together. And
that gamey odour that we had at the beginning, everything is mellowed. Yeah. Everything is far more subtle now. Yeah. So you just have a piece of the jugged hare.
It's falling away from the bone. And all of that marinating and slow cooking in the oven with the wine and the stock and the juniper berries and stuff, the meat has just absorbed it all. It's dark. It's not even like rabbit, to be honest. You know, the nearest thing to this would be deer or boar, even wild boar.
That was Chef Mark Hicks on the story of jugged hare. Well, let's go back to the more abundant rabbit. And with me are chefs Oliver Pratt and Barney Horton. And Barney, let's finish off with a dish that you've brought in.
So this is it's a very old and well-established tradition of preserving in salt. Basically, it's the rabbit leg, which has been preserved like bacon, is preserved pork. So it's got cloves and juniper berries and nutmeg, as well as pepper, in the marinade with salt, and then it's all rubbed into the flesh, and it was left for 12 hours, rinsed off, and then cooked in a mixture, actually, of goose fat and olive oil, just to get that sort of balance of flavour. And the thing about confying and the cooking in fat is that it's brilliant for
retaining the moisture.
Exactly, retaining the moisture.
I have to say that meat there is the nicest I've had for a while on some rabbit, because it really is tender.
Makes your mouth water.
This is really, really easy. I think people, once they've done one rabbit, whatever they've done with it almost, will never look back. It's delicious, it's cheap, it's easy to prepare.
And if at a different time of year people did want to eat rabbit, and clearly there is a legitimate supply chain of farmed rabbit, would either of you consider?
Not farmed? At all.
Well, no. I wouldn't. Not, no. No. Never.
Because I think, for a start, I don't think the word farmed is truly coming into this. It, you know, as we know what's going on, it's more battery farmed. If it was a better process involved.
In free range.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
Oliver Pratt and Barney Horton with Dan Saladino. As you heard, Oliver and Barney, like a lot of chefs, would like to buy rabbits from a welfare-friendly farming system, a free-range system. But up until now, not many people in this country have been interested in setting up that kind of rabbit farming. But it's changing. Outside Chippenham, 28-year-old Peter Rigby is just starting out as a farmer, and he's decided his future lies in free-range, organic rabbit production. Right now, he's only got 7 rabbits kept in hutches. But rabbit habits being what they are, he's planning to produce 25,000 rabbits a year, kept outside in runs, very soon. Emma Wetherill went to meet him as he fed his does.
Every time I feed them, you run your hand down the back. If you can feel the back bones, you're not feeding them enough. If you can't feel anything, you've fed them too much.
And so they're in what would just look like normal rabbit hutches that you see in a back garden as pets?
They are, yeah. They're slightly bigger than standard. What I've built, it's just over 1.5 metres wide and it's 600 mil deep.
So tell me a bit of the kind of backstory of why you got into this.
It's a bit of a funny story, really. I'm a railway engineer by trade. The recession hit and I went travelling. While I was travelling, I did a lot of farming in Australia. Got the idea that when I come home, I need to have a lifestyle change, become a farmer. Yep. I sort of stumbled across game and then onto rabbits. So I can put more rabbits on the land with them in the free-range environment and make the most out of it. And that's the road we're on now.
How did you find out how to do rabbit farming?
I haven't. And in all honesty, I still haven't. The only models that I have to go off are the American or the European way, which is in cages. Free-range, there isn't a model to go off. And that's why it's a bit of a learning curve.
Should we go and have a look at the other place?
Yeah. Yep.
So where are we? Yeah. So we're outside now in the field, and this is where you're hoping the rabbits will be ending up when they start breeding.
Yeah, the litter will spend the rest of their life outside in the field. But at the moment, they've got 15 square metres, and that'll house probably 5 or 6 rabbits. And that's enough space that they can run around, they run from each other, they run to each other, they hop, they jump, they do everything else.
So when you get up to 25,000 rabbits a year, is that still the same idea that you'll still just have lots and fenced off areas?
Yeah, it would be, I'm hoping, the whole 3 acres.
So are there any specifications for being a free-range rabbit farmer?
I'd say this is probably the hardest thing I've had to come across. No one wants to say yes or no to anything I ask. I ask every organisation for whether it's hutch requirements or how to dispatch a rabbit. No one actually gives you a specific answer. It's not done in this country anymore, so it's quite hard to do it on a commercial scale.
And is anybody interested already in the idea of buying these rabbits?
I've got a friend who's a chef, up and coming restaurant in Bath, and he wants it. He wants to help me, and I want to help him. So I've got a lot of connections like that. I mean, I've got records of every rabbit that will be on the farm. If they want older ones for a more deeper flavour stew, then they just say, next month, can we have a few that are a bit older? And they'll take an older stock. So hopefully, whatever they want.
So how much do you think each rabbit carcass will sell for?
I'm sort of aiming around, it's the £4 mark. Only because if you go to a farm shop, they're between £5 and £6. I can undercut them £4. That's my plan.
Obviously, free-range chicken has been a huge success. You can buy it in supermarkets, we know what it is. Do you think that free-range rabbit could be something that we would just get used to seeing in shops and in butchers?
I'd like to think that even if I don't make it, that someone else does, and that rabbit does become a secondary thing to chicken. There's no reason why it shouldn't. You go to Europe and it's huge. You go to America, it's huge. The conditions just aren't right. It's in butchers at the moment. It's just your smaller local farm shops. So I'd like to see it one day in the big supermarket, definitely.
Peter Rigby.
Well, it's a rabbit action, it's a take in the day.
So, has this programme changed your mind about eating rabbit? Well, tweet us at BBC Food Prog.
Like I eat a bitty bunny, I'll hop all night. Long about 4, be feeling just right where.
And while your hands hover over the keyboard, we're planning a special programme in the new year with the master of kitchen science and lore, Harold McGee, the inspirer and mentor of Heston Blumenthal and a lot of others. You heard him on last week's programme. We'll have him on a line from California to answer your questions. So send us some good ones via the food programme website.
Well, it's a whole lot of hopping till the sun shines bright. Means you're gonna bop the whole long night. I'm a-liking your rocking, your rhythm too. Well, look out, honey, I'm gonna cabbage on you. Rock it now, bop, yeah, bop.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.